And away we go. Here it is, a Thursday morning, August the 15th, right smack dab in the middle of August 2019, 18 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Over the Back Fence Hour with myself and Pastor Steve Whitaker. Pastor, how are you on this Thursday morning?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day in Marion. Other than, you know what, I got up this morning and I came out and I saw this dew all over everything. And it was that first hint of fall is sneaking right around the corner. Man, I thought summer just got here.
Well, you know, summer started so late with the rain and the cooler weather that we really only had about a month and a half of really warm weather. Although I hear this weekend's supposed to be warm.
Is it?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if we'll have an early winter or not, but boy, I sure could use a couple more months of summer if they just, maybe the good Lord will give it to us, right?
That's right. We'll hope. We'll hope.
So what's on your mind this morning, Scott?
Well, you know, I tell you, it's been kind of an interesting week because not a lot, obviously there's always something going on in the news, but not a lot generally has been going on. But I'll tell you, I heard a quote last night that I thought was interesting that really has nothing to do with anything other than what people do in general. And it was, fail doing what you want to do.
And that's not a, I don't like the fail part, but if I'm going to fail, I'd like to fail doing what I want to do.
Well, right. I think, when you start out to do something that you want to do, a lot of people go around asking advice, and they'll say, well, do you think this will work? Do you think that'll work? How should I deal with these people? Because there's always other people involved. And I think the meaning behind it is that if in the end it doesn't work, you're going to feel much better failing, doing it the way you wanted to do it, rather than taking somebody else's advice and failing. Because then you're going to blame them. You're going to say, I just should have done it this way. But if you do it the way you want to do it, I agree with that. I think that sometimes people will, I mean, when you are in a business, I'm always shocked when you tell people that you're going to be running this business, how much unsolicited advice you get without ever asking.
Yeah, and I think that one of the unsolicited things that really is, a lot of people say, well, you're not going to make it. That isn't going to work.
Absolutely.
But you hear that a lot. I mean, probably, I would imagine the greater percentage of people that you talk to, especially it's family. I read a book one time that a pastor let me borrow. I can't remember the name of it, but it was about facing the giants that are in front of you when you go to do something. And one of the biggest deterrents that people have when they step out on a limb, so to speak, is family. Family will be one of your biggest critics of why you can't do something. And unfortunately, when that comes true, then you got another problem. But, you know, I know someone in a particular situation right now that was told when they began the work 20 years ago that they were going to fail. And they were told this by a family member that was very dear to them, that was trying to protect them from failing, but was just adamant they would fail at what they're doing. And the business itself is now taking a downturn. Not his particular business, I mean it is, but it's because the entire industry is in a downturn. Well, I honestly think that part of the reason that they hang on as long as they do is because of that person that said, you're going to fail. And unfortunately, sometimes we hang on to things for a long time because we're afraid of what people will say if we do fail. When sometimes there's signs in a particular thing that it's time to, as the Pink Panther said, exit stage left.
Well, there is a book that I read years and years ago, and I believe it's still out there on the market, and it's called The Magic of Believing by Claude Bristol. Interesting, I can still remember that title. And one of the things that I took away from that book, there wasn't a whole lot that I took away from it, but one of the things I took was, when you have plans to do something, no matter what it is in life, not even starting a business, just in general, if you're telling people what you're, don't tell them. Because they unintentionally sometimes throw cold water on you. They don't mean to, but they just, it's
You think it's human nature to do that?
I think it is. But when's the last time you told somebody something about your plans and they were just absolutely positive about it? Oh, that's great. Nobody says that. Nobody, oh, that's great. They've got to give you their critique.
I don't know. I think that I'm in a little different situation with a lot of things that I talk about because they usually involve ministry in the church, and people are a little slower to poo-poo those things, I think. But I would agree. I think that it's most of the time people are in most situations when you tell them a grand plan you have. I think what you have to be careful is making sure that you don't rob somebody of their joy. Of something. You know, we're always telling people to be creative, to do their best, to go out and reach. You know, is there ever a graduation speech that was ever done that didn't have reach for the stars in it? And they do. And then when people reach for the stars, you know, sometimes those very people closest to them that have told them they can be and do anything, that will you know, cut their legs out from under.
You know, a trend I've seen, and it's a little sad because a lot of times I'm around kids, well, not really kids, young adults who are 18, just graduated from high school. And I'll say, okay, well, what are you going to do now? And some of them say college, and that's good. But my question always is, well, what do you want to do with that? And the answer almost always has to, in some roundabout way, do with money. You know, okay, I'm going to go in and I'm going to be an electrical engineer. And I said, well, that's great. I said, why an electrical engineer? Well, it pays well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. That's not really a good decision-making process. That's not, it's nice, I guess, but I don't know. I heard a story one time. I don't know if I've ever told it on this show, but I thought this was a great piece of advice. There was a guy who was doing a job and making okay money. You know, he was making what he wanted, but he loved his job. Loved his job. And because he was doing it so well, another business came over and offered him the same job with them at much more money. And, of course, he was going to take the job for much more money. And he was just about to do it, and one of his friends came up to him and said, well, why are you leaving where you are? You love it there. Well, you know, there's so much money, much more money over there. The first time you go, and this was a woman, the first time you go over there and something doesn't go the way you want it to, you're going to regret the decision and you're going to be miserable.
The other thing is you're going to take the money and you're going to, whatever amount of money you have coming in, you have a tendency to fill that, to fill your life with those, and all of a sudden your needs are at that edge again. And you know, I have a tendency, there's something that I refer to as the crow mentality, and I think we suffer from it in America. You know, they say that if you find a crow's nest, you'll find shiny things in it. They love to pick up shiny things and put them in their nest and decorate them. And as Americans, I think just as people in general, people like money, they like things, they like titles, they like, you know, those kind of things. It's interesting that, and I want to get back to something you said in just a minute, but after I make this point, that I was talking to someone one time, and they were telling me about someone that we both knew. I knew from years earlier and hadn't seen them in many years, and they were telling me about something that went on in their life, and they said, you know, they're a lawyer. Okay. What if they would have said, they're a plumber? You see the point? I mean, we try to define people of their worth based on position, based on money, and that's just not the way it is at all, and it never should be that way. And that is one of the reasons I think that many people on the lower tier in society, people that have not had the opportunities others have, maybe, and people say, wait a minute, this is the land of equal opportunity. It is and it isn't, because if you were raised in a generational family that has seen negativity in their own family, and it's been drilled in them from a young person that you'll never have anything, that this is the way you live, this is tough. Yeah, that is not, they don't have the same opportunity because they've got to overcome what they've been brought up around to make that hurdle. Whereas someone that grows up in a family that is always challenging them and telling them how great they are and what they can do, it's a completely different thing. And I say, I don't think we're comparing apples to apples. The only one that really compares, looks at apples to apples, I think, is God. Because we're all, you know, we're all the same in his eyes. But, you know, I think that we have to get past this whole thing of looking at people and making decisions on money, on prestige. I would love sometime, you know, you talk to a parent when their kids are graduating. And as a pastor, I've said this many times, I would love to see a parent tell me one time when I say, what are your kids going to do? Or well, they're going to, you know, they're not sure, or they might go into this direction, but they're really searching that out right now. And, you know, they're praying for God to lead them. And first and foremost, they're going to be the person they should be, and they'll make a decision eventually. Or you know what I mean? But the minute a kid says, you know, I want to be a doctor, or I want to be a lawyer, I'm going to, you know, the parents are all over that. Why? I mean, why is a doctor any more important than someone that works and lifts people up every day in another profession, or someone that, let me tell you something, if they didn't pick up the trash in Marion for a month, those guys would be real important. And in any other field that's out there, I mean, they're there for a reason. And I think you're right, Terry. I think that you've got to find thing. You've got to do something that fits the way you were made, that fits your personality. There's a lot of people that are unhappy in professions because they were pushed there, they were driven there. They thought that it was going to be one thing, like you said, and it's another. But yet they were... they're afraid to quit. They're afraid to walk away from it. You've got to enjoy what you're doing.
And there's a tremendous amount of, and I hate to say it, of this that comes from parents. Because I think parents have an idea to protect their children because they start doing it when they're very young. And there's nothing where I think you have the tendency to protect your children throughout their life. I mean, I've known 80-year-old parents who, when their 60-year-old child... they learn that they're being rushed to the hospital for something, you know, they're the first one there and
that would
help,
be me.
Help this person and, you know, trying to take charge. And that's right, because that's always the instinct. And I think that's the instinct that in this particular situation kicks in, because they do, you know, you're not going to have enough money to live doing that career. That's not going to turn out. Don't you dislike not knowing how much, you know, there are a lot of things that go into that. And I don't think they're trying to be, of course they're not trying to be negative, but it does come off negative.
Yeah, it does come off. Yeah, I understand what you mean. One thing, too, though, I think that when you're going through that period of deciding what you want to do as a young person or as an adult, you know, you're trying to find that your niche, so to speak, you still work. You know, you still get out there. Just because you don't like something or you can't figure out what you like is not a reason to not be responsible and, you know, take care of yourself, have personal responsibility. So get out there and work and find something. You might just get surprised that you found something in your general job that, you know, hey, you know, this is really something that works well with me. But yeah, I agree with you that I think sometimes that you know, parents can play a huge role in that.
Well, there's also something when it comes to parents, and I don't mean to be rough on parents, because there's a lot of great parents out there.
Yes, there are.
But one thing that I've never understood is, you know, a big part of life is what you just said, being able to take care of yourself, being able to buy your food, being able to, you know, pay your rent. And for some reason, I've noticed parents who, as the person gets older or as the person gets further along in life, now these are the same parents who will say, you know, you can always come back home. You can always, you know, this is a safe place for you. You can always come back home.
Boy, mine didn't say that.
A lot of them do. And you're out there and you're coming up a little short for whatever reason, and they feel awful about helping them out because they feel, I think in some way, like they've failed because the person is not self-sufficient. Now, I'm not saying that you have to take care of your child for the rest of their life financially, but what I am saying is we all have the ability to look at the situation. Now, if your child maybe has an addiction to alcohol and you see that they can afford the alcohol, that's one thing. If they might have an addiction to drugs and they can afford that, if they have got themselves looped into a big car payment or they've got themselves, those were decisions they made that were not particularly good. But if they're showing up to work every day and just working at a job that does not have a high wage, and then you come and penalize them more and say, well, you know, I don't think what you're doing is the best way in life to do it. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily the best way to handle that.
I think that we have lost our way in our country of living within our means. And I said this on a previous show that I think that when credit became so common in this country, people stopped living within their means and they started one. Everyone had the opportunity to have the same thing everyone else had. The biggest difference was one group of people could pay for it and the other group of people were going to be strapped to payments forever to look like they had what the people that could pay for it had. And I know that when I was growing up, and I know you've heard people say this before, we were poor, but we never knew it. And the problem is today, when you're poor, you know it, because it seems to be so important that we all look like we have something. It started, you know, when I was in high school and just getting out of high school, I started seeing people buying really, really expensive tennis shoes for their kids. And that just blew me away because some of these families were dirt poor. They didn't have anything, and their kids are walking around at that time in $90-$100 tennis shoes, and I'm thinking, what is this all about? You know, I had a pair of B&E Flyers that cost $299 at Kmart or whatever store was open at the time, and I was just comfortable in them, and I just knew that this is what we had, this is what I wore. No one got on me, no one teased me about it, and we just tried today. We're all wearing masks, and I think that what we're talking about this morning has a, you know, plays into that mask wearing. We're always trying to please someone else, and we're always concerned about how other people see us, and that's what elevates us rather than what's inside. You know, as a Christian, I believe that God designed all of us individually, and in a way that there is a track in our life that we can be on that is how we're made, how we're bent, so to speak. And I think that we really need to, in seeking out God, you know, you find that bend. I think that we need to, you know, the old list thing. Everyone says, if you can't make a decision, make a list. You know, pros here, cons here. And if say you're thinking about going in a direction, a particular direction, and if the only thing in the pros column is money, I think you need to reconsider it.
Well, but you know, the thing of that is that I have seen people go through the want ads, and all they look at is how much an hour is this? Not really caring about the job.
Yeah. That's true, but, you know, I'll correct something I said a minute ago about the money. If you're in a position that you have to make that kind of money, sometimes you have to take a job to make that kind of money until you figure some things out or until maybe that job becomes a job that you like. But money's a huge driver. I mean, when you've got the rent due or the house payment due and the car payment and the, you know, the braces for the kids and the utilities and on and on and on it goes. One thing you and I don't really understand, too, is people that have no money but have a bunch of dogs, big dogs. And I'm thinking, you realize how much those things are eating? And you don't need all those big dogs.
Well, that's another thing. I think that, you know, do people have new furniture? Are people making payments there? Do they have a new car?
Sure,
do they
have
to pay full coverage insurance because of it? There are little things that you can tell by people once you go inside their life to see exactly why they need to make that certain amount of money.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, Terry, some people just get addicted to spending, and it really doesn't matter. Sometimes people tell me what they make, and they're having a hard time, and I'm thinking, are you kidding me? You make twice what I do. And what's going on here? Well, you know, we got to have this. We have to. No, you don't. We've got to take three vacations a year. Really? I mean, when I was growing up, I can remember one vacation that we took as a family. And I can barely remember it because I was five. The point is, we enjoyed each other's company. We did things. We took like a day break and would go to like Lake Erie or something. But we were not in an income bracket to take vacations. So it was never something, we didn't consider that. We made do with what we had, and we had a great time at home. I had a great childhood in that way. And we just today, we feel, as Americans, I fear we feel that we're entitled to have what everyone else has and the best of it all the time. And the truth is that there are going to be, there's always in the world been a class of people, a class isn't even a good word, I guess, but there's always been a group of people that know how to make money. And they come from people that know how to make money. And because of that, I think that, you know, they live a different way than other people do. And so what? I'm more concerned about what's in here, inside, than what I'm able to do outside. You know, I just was reading a biography of a guy yesterday that I knew he had died a while back. He was a celebrity. But I didn't know that he committed suicide until I was reading this biography. And he said in a suicide note, "I'm just a lost, lonely soul." And I thought, you got to be kidding me. You know, if that doesn't speak to what we're talking about, nothing does. This guy had it all, man. I mean, he was popular. He was in pop culture. He was he lived in a beautiful home. He could have anything that he wanted. He had. And I'm a lost, lonely soul. I mean, something's wrong with that picture. And I think that, do you realize, Terry, the amount of antidepressants in this country that people are taking, and the level of them, because they're so stressed, because they're doing so much to try to accomplish so much, to try to look a certain way, to put on a persona in a certain way. When you do that with your kids and your family, what do you think it does for them when they get to be the age they got to decide, who am I and what do I want to do, when they've been propped up, when they've been made to look like something that maybe they're really not? You see what I mean? We can look like anything we want to today. Just dress a certain way and act a certain way, and people assume you are a certain way. And I think that we're really hurting ourselves. We're too judgmental.
Well, you know, what makes me think of this is what you just said there about the celebrity in the book who committed suicide. And you would think, well, they have it all. Well, I think that exactly illustrates the point, is that I don't think it has so much to do with what you have. Because obviously there are people, you know, we have a great amount of homeless people in this country, a great number of homeless people. Now, they are not committing suicide because, I mean,
they're too busy surviving.
But they're homeless. And so why would the person who has everything commit suicide? Now, I think the reason is because everything just brings a whole new set of problems. And are you equipped to deal with those problems? We were talking on the air before we went on the air this morning about some high-profile people who are in legal trouble right now. Now, would they be in legal trouble if they were not celebrities? Who knows? But I can tell you that it wouldn't be on the front page of the magazines if they weren't famous.
Right. Well, this particular person hadn't been in trouble. But I think what I was trying to, the point that I was trying to make in that is that everyone looks at success as something of notoriety. They look at, you know, boy, if I could just be that, I strive to be that person. You know, boy, if I could just be in the NFL, you imagine if I were drafted first and blah, blah, blah. Can you imagine if I was a leader in this band? Can you imagine? And on and on and on it goes. And the point is, they find out when they arrive there that it's not always what it was cracked up to be. We still have to satisfy the soul. And it doesn't matter how much you have or how much you don't have, that soul still needs satisfied. And that's the problem people are not dealing with what's inside. They're only dealing with what's on the surface. And it doesn't matter how rich you get or how publicly acclaimed you are, you have that same feeling that you have to fill that the poorest person out there does. And so why wouldn't you? And I think that there's expectations too. I think that when the more that you have, the more you're in the public eye, people expect you to have it together. And when you don't have it together, when you truly don't, it puts on a whole nother pressure altogether, because you've got to go out and put on this huge facade in public, and inside you're a mess. And, you know, but then again, we're doing that every day anyway.
Well, you know, but why, and this comes back to what you said about we're too judgmental. People make mistakes. They do. They make them on all different levels all the time. So why do we feel it our need, when we clearly know that somebody made a mistake, to let them know that we know that they made a mistake?
You know, that's a good one. You really want me to give you my shoot from the hip answer and hope I have a decent aim? I think it is because we are all lacking in some way. And if for 30 seconds we can put that person below where we think we are, it makes us feel better and elevated. That is my shoot from the hip.
But you know, I've always said, if you, and it's clear, anytime you go out of your way to criticize somebody with no provocation, when you do that, it's clear to me, and it's clear to a lot of other people, that you're jealous. There's something.
You're right.
We know why you're doing this. Now, here's the problem with that. They are jealous. They know it. They would never admit to it. Now, okay. So, let's say something does happen to this person that is not maybe the brightest thing in the world, and they do make a mistake. Well, of course you're going to be the first one there to jump all over it. You've been jumping for years. So, at this particular point, just because they made a mistake, now do you feel superior to them? Because I don't know that you are.
No, you're not. And I think that people around you recognize that too. Like, Okay, you finally got one in your win column. But, you know, the truth is, I think that a lot of people, it is just their low self-esteem causes it. I deal with a lot of people, and people that have that low self-esteem, it manifests itself in a lot of ways. Some people become introverts. Some people become highly critical of everyone around them. Some people become the class clown. There's all those things. And, you know, something, I was in a class one day with our church association, and Rich Halcom was teaching the class, our associational ministry, and it was just a one-day thing. And he was talking about listening to what people are really saying and not what is coming out of their mouth. In other words, when you listen to people, when someone's talking to you, what are they really saying and why are they saying it? And you sometimes, what's coming out of their mouth is completely different than what they're really saying. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, at some point you have to realize that you are a fallible person. And I forget who said this, but boy, I believe it's true. The greatest thing you can do in life is learn to forgive yourself.
I agree.
Because have you ever noticed even how harsh other people can be when you make a mistake? And some people can be very harsh. It's the internalization that you have of that you feel that you didn't live up to whatever standard you were supposed. Okay, well, guess what? You're not perfect. You weren't born perfect. You're not going to die perfect. You made a mistake. You know, move on.
You're right. And I, the reason I say that, I agree with you that that's one of the greatest things you can do is forgive yourself. Because I think that if we understand that God's forgiven us, if a God that great can forgive me, then I certainly ought to be able to forgive myself. Because by not being able to forgive what I've done, I'm saying that what His Son did for us was not good enough. You know, you could cover everyone else's wrongs, but you couldn't cover mine. and we have to understand if God can forgive you, and He does, then and I don't know, other than unbelief, there's not a sin in the Bible that I know of that's not forgivable. I mean, you know, there's no big unpardonable sin out there other than rejecting God itself. Anything can be, and that's why I believe in redemption of people. I think that we've lost our way in the prison systems with not being rehabilitation places anymore. I know it's hard because the amount of people coming in the door, we talked about that before the show. But, you know, I think that sometimes, in a way, we're almost getting people a little bit different, hitting the prisons for the first time today than we were 40 or 50 years ago. A lot of these kids, by the time they hit prison, they have already been in juvenile for 2 to 3 years, you know, off and on. And they've started a crime at a younger age. And I think that we need to show them forgiveness and love and compassion before they ever get to that. You know, if someone tells you that you're going to be a failure your whole life from the day you're born and there's no hope, guess what? You're probably going to be a failure and have no hope. Why not? It's a family tradition, right? Didn't Hank Williams sing about that? Hank Williams Jr. One of his popular songs. Hank Williams Jr.
Absolutely.
You know, if I get drunk and whatever, sing all night long, it's a family tradition, and you know, there is a family tradition. You know, that the Bible talks about sin of the father being followed into the, you know, third and fourth generation. Well, that's not because it's a curse. That is because that's what happens. I mean, there are consequences. There's collateral damage to how we talk, what we do, how we act. You know, if I'm totally negative all the time and I give no hope out there and say, do you think any of my kids would be successful today? They might be, but there's a good chance they wouldn't be. So I think that we have to take some personal responsibility on how we treat people around us.
Well, see, this is where there are two types of jealousy, in my opinion. The one we just talked about, which drives people to be negative to other people. And then there is the type of jealousy where maybe you go to a concert, let's say, and you hear somebody who can really sing, and you don't have that talent. And you say,
sorry, there's something in my...
Oh, no problem. And you say, wow, you know, I wish I could sing like that. You know, that's a good jealousy. You're not criticizing them. You're not saying, oh, they're garbage, because, you know, that looking them up. You're genuinely jealous that you don't have that talent. But if your jealousy manifests itself in a negative way toward other people, that has much more to do with you than the other person.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that, and it's hard sometimes. I know I'm learning. I learn every day. I'm closer to the grave than I am to the cradle, and I still learn every day. And one thing that I'm learning is sometimes it's just better to keep your mouth shut. I mean, because honestly, there are times when criticism may be warranted. Certain injustices. And things of that nature, things that maybe at work, I'll only give you an example. Maybe at work, the boss does have a boss's pet, and it's not fair because they always get away with slacking on their work or dumping it on you and those kind of things. And you've tried to change that, and, you know, you're complaining about it, hopefully initially to the right people, and that didn't get anywhere. Then it gets wrong. Before you know it, you're labeled the complainer, and this is the guy that's slacking, right? So sometimes, even though you're in the right, and there's legitimate grounds for how you feel, sometimes we just kind of have to decide, look, I can either deal with this, because it's not going to change, or maybe I'll have to move on. And that's just the way it is in life. I know that there's things in our own church association that I struggle with, and I have to do that column thing. You know, in this column is the reasons that it's important to be there. And in this column, there's the reasons of things, man, I wish were different. And I have to look at those and say, where am I? And it's the same way with everything in life. But the hard thing to learn is, and it's something that's difficult for me to do sometimes, is to make sure that I'm not complaining too much about the stuff over here, because then I get labeled a complainer. No one will listen to me about anything anyway.
Well, you know, that comes back to where we started this morning, because it's always funny to me that when you do something, now, when things are riding high, and most of the time you have people with you, you know, there are people around you. Boy, they're riding high with you. They think you're the greatest thing, and they're having the greatest time, and everything's hunky-dory. And then when there's the rough waters, which always come, they always come at some point or another. Now, sometimes the rough waters sink the ship, or sometimes you just navigate through the rough waters, but it happens. As soon as that moment happens, the people who turn to you and say, well, why didn't you do that? Why didn't you fix it? What was going on there? What? And I just turn to them and I say, why didn't you? You know, what am I supposed to do?
You know, I'm very blessed to have some people close to me that'll usually rattle my cage if I have a tendency to head into rough waters and they see it coming. And I regroup, and I do try to stay close to the Lord and take His direction and stay in the Word of God, and that helps me so much in direction. When I was younger, I lived in rough waters. I mean, I had no navigational skills whatsoever when it came to rough water, and I just bowled ahead. And I think a lot of people do that, but you're right. And most of the time, people will be the first ones to say, well, I saw that coming, didn't you?
Yeah.
Well, like you said, if you saw it coming, you know, hey, heads up over here. I got in a horrible situation when I was younger with a relationship with someone in work that involved my entire family. And it was a huge move that we made. And I thought it was a positive. I didn't do enough research to find out what this fella and his family were really all about. And lo and behold, when it blew up and the rough water hit and I had to exit the situation, all these people came up to me and says, man, they did the same thing to four or five other families. And I'm like, you think you could have told me that when you heard I was, you know what I mean? You'd have saved me thousands and thousands of dollars. But, you know, sometimes people would just like to sit back and twiddle their thumbs and say, let's just watch this. He's going to fail.
Well, that's true. And it's fascinating to me, because a lot of times people do have things invested in whatever's going on, whether it's a business or a relationship or whatever. Yes, you have things invested. Okay. If something bad happens and it hurts you in some way, why weren't you more hands-on? Because clearly, if your answer is, I didn't know about it, well, why weren't you there? When's the last time you came around to check on something like that? When's the last time you just asked, is there anything I can do? You know, that helps sometimes.
Well, and that's why I would say I didn't have those close I call them they're accountability partners. I didn't have those when I was a young man, but I do now. And I think that I'll tell you something that we just got a minute or so here, a couple minutes. One thing I would like to encourage people to do out there, find someone that you can trust, someone that may be a dear friend, it can be a family member, preferably not, but say, hey, there's nothing wrong with saying, can you be my accountability partner? And, you know, if I need to talk to you in confidence, I can. If you need to talk to me in confidence, you can. If you see me going down, you know, that we were open with each other. I was at a conference several years ago, and there was Kurt Warner was there, NFL quarterback. And he was talking about how he and a couple other players that he had played with in the past from around the country were on conference call as accountability partners. And they made sure they kept each other together. They checked with each other. They prayed for each other. One particular case, a guy was really struggling with his spouse, and they finally got to the point with him and said, look, either you're going to go to your wife and tell her these struggles before it goes too far, or we're going to. So you need to, and the guy did. And those kind of people are so important in your life. So if you can think of, if there's someone out there maybe in your church, or someone that you trust, you know, try to have those people in your lives.
Well, and I know immediately. I mean, I know just thinking in my head here that if something bad happened to me, I know the people who would be there. I know the people who would be the first to say, that's awful, how can I help? I know who those people would be. And I also know who the people would be who would be there to criticize, who would be there to say, why didn't you think? I know who those people are too. Now, if you looked at them now, you would say, well, they're all proactive in your life. But I know where they would be if something bad happened.
Yeah, I had a conversation a couple weeks ago with someone close to me that said their business was really struggling. And they said, you know, I've always been there for everyone that I can in this business and been out there over and over to help them and been at their beck and call. He said, but I'll tell you something, if I failed tomorrow, he said, there'd be more of them throwing dirt in the hole than there would be reaching down to pull me out.
That's true. That's true. Because you know what I think a lot of that is, and this is with a minute left, I think a lot of that has to do with the whole idea of, to be honest with you, I don't want to get any of that on me. I don't want to admit to myself that something I was involved with failed.
Yeah, very probably. We're always trying to protect our image, and that's just silly.
Image,
yeah. Look in the mirror. That's the main image you got to be able to live with. If you can look in the mirror and live with that image, you're probably okay. But if you got to dress it up, you're in trouble. Hey, it's been great being here today, Scott. I look forward to doing the pastor's spot again on Tuesday. When's this replay?
This replays on Sunday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. and then next Tuesday following the pastor's spot from 6 to 7.
Great to see you. Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend. God bless you. I'll be back in about 10 minutes.
Bye.
You're listening to WW 107.1 M. Listen for guests like legendary comedian